Well, hello, everyone. It's time for another edition of Crime Wave, the podcast featuring mystery, thriller, and suspense authors and the stories behind their stories. Crime Wave is part of the Authors on the Air global radio network with over 4 million listeners worldwide. I'm your host, Bonner Spring, and today I'm speaking with Megan Campisi. Megan is a playwright, a novelist, and a teacher. Her plays have been performed in China, France, and the United States. She attended Yale University, and I'm going to give French my best shot, L'École Internationale de Théâtre Jacques Lecoq. Her first novel, Sin Eater, received the 2021 Debut Crown Award from the Historical Writers Association. Megan lives in Brooklyn, New York, with her family, and I'm delighted to welcome you to Crime Wave, Megan.
It is a pleasure to be here.
Well, you know, I mentioned your debut novel, Sin Eater, a minute ago in your bio. Now, that book was an intriguing alternate reality, well-written, and I highly recommend it. But if we started talking about it today, we really never have enough time to get into your newly released novel, The Widow Spy. The Widow Spy takes place during the U.S. Civil War. It is based on the true story of the first female Pinkerton detective. But first, since I always start this show by mentioning authors and the stories behind their stories, you were a playwright and probably a whole bunch of other things before you became a novelist. So would you please start by giving our listeners your backstory, how you got into theater, into playwriting, and then into writing prose?
So I was always fascinated by theater and loved it in school, high school, college, and so I kind of knew that that was where I was headed. And I decided I wanted to make my own theater. So rather than working with a script that someone else had written and then you are enacting, I started to do devised theater, which is where you get your ensemble and you create a piece of theater, an original play. And so I went to the French school, L'École Internationale de Théâtre Jacques Lecoq, because it specializes in how to make your own theater. And then I started doing it. And I was an actor at that time. But as I started working and creating more and more of my own theater, I realized that I loved the writing process, the structuring process, the dramaturgy process. And I gravitated towards writing. And then I had my first kid, and it's very hard to get to rehearsals when you have a newborn. And it became easier to just sit at a computer and write. And so I decided to turn myself to long form fiction. And that's when I wrote my first novel.
Wow. I think the record should reflect that I'm laughing massively about having children and trying to get to rehearsals. That's great. So let's move on to the dynamite setup of The Widow Spy. I very briefly introduced it, but could you tell us a little bit more about Kate Warren's story, please?
Sure. So Kate Warren is just a fascinating historical figure. She was the first female detective in the United States, and she was a Pinkerton agent. And she was hired as a detective 50 years before the U.S. police force began hiring women. And 50 years is a long time. And Alan Pinkerton hired her. And then when he was hired by Abraham Lincoln to be the Secret Service during the Civil War, Kate went along with him and became a spy. So I was fascinated by her story. Now, before she became a Pinkerton agent, very little is known about her, which I have to confess is kind of a novelist's dream in a certain way, because there were a lot of, you know, kind of tent poles to my story, historical facts that I was going to abide by. But before she was basically 22 years old, there was a lot of leeway for me to create, which was just was such a joy.
That's wonderful. Now you've got Kate Warren and Alan Pinkerton. They're real people and real detectives. I love that you've been able to take this real person and, shall I use the word, embellish her life the way you wanted her to do. So what is this mission that Kate's on in The Widow Spy that is just such a the mission? I think the promo material for it starts out by saying it could end the Civil War. You know, it is like, wow, talk about stakes, right?
Absolutely. Yes. So we forget that at the beginning of the war, people don't know how long it's going to last. And especially at the beginning of the Civil War, the North really felt this was a done deal. It was going to be over very quickly. It didn't really feel like a war. It felt like a rebellion that was going to be pretty quickly quashed. And then the Battle of Bull Run at Manassas happens. And all of a sudden, everything switches. And the North realizes, oh, this is a real thing that we're in, and it's going to last longer than we think. And so Abraham Lincoln talks to his Secret Service, because the Battle of Bull Run at Manassas was won by the Confederacy's force, but it was also won with spycraft. And so they wanted to find out, who are these spies, how are they working, and can we stop them? So they trace one of the spies. The spy ring has a spy named Rose Greenhow, who was a woman living in Washington, high society. She had born 8 children, 3 survived, but she was in her late 40s. And she was apparently, you know, there was a lot of evidence that she was maybe a spy. So Alan Pinkerton puts her under house arrest. And the goal is, if they can intercept her spy cipher key, then they might be able to intercept more Confederate messages and maybe end the war very quickly. So it really was extremely high stakes. If they could catch a spy quickly enough, get the information, and then intercept enemy messages. And Kate Warren, so Alan Pinkerton, in so much of my writing was based on real historical information. And Alan Pinkerton wrote up his agency's exploits in these what were called story papers or dime novels at the time, which are kind of pulpy stories, but they are somewhat historical documents. And then this Confederate spy, Rose Greenhow, also wrote a memoir about her time as a spy. And so I've got these two documents, and I will say right up front, they conflict, because these writers were writing for audiences just like we are today. But it was fascinating to go in and see how they conflicted, how they wrote about each other. And both of them mentioned that there was a woman, Union spy, one of the Pinkertons there. Now, they didn't mention her by name, or they gave her pseudonym, which was Ellen. But there's very good evidence that it was Kate Warren. Could have been another of Pinkerton woman, but I went with the most likely person, which is Kate Warren. And so my novel is about these two women kind of going head to head. They're each trying to get information from the others. Particularly the Union spy, Kate, is trying to break Rose Greenhow, get her cipher key. And again, if she can do it in a couple days, she may be able to end the war.
That is so great. You know, I like to ask about research when I talk with authors of history, but oh my God, the research that the material you must have had is just absolutely fascinating. And I have to say, I'm in awe of writers who can make stories of a different time and place come to life, like you do in The Widow's Spy, which is great. Now, I was curious, I have not read any of Alan Pinkerton's stories, which you just alluded to. So Kate's a real person. She may not be the real person in The Widow's Spy, but she's a real person. But she also turns up as a character in all of these stories. Are Alan Pinkerton's stories fact or fiction? I mean,
they are purported fact. I mean, and he says in his preface, these are all true. These are real accounts of the history that happened. And so he believed that, I mean, as much as any person can tell fact, you know, he told his point of view, and all of his detective stories are accounts of his agency and what they were doing. And in fact, it's funny, if you read them as detective stories, they're a little bit slow, because he actually takes you through very meticulously how his agents caught people, and not just in the Civil War, but how they caught train robbers, how they caught murderers and counterfeiters. Oh. And you realize that there's like a little bit of action, but it's mostly like going through a lot of receipts and waiting and watching people for like days at a time. And he does not speed through that, I will say. But it's a wonderful, his documents are fabulous, because they also show you his perspective on the time. Like when he writes about his women detectives, to hire women at that time, women wage earners, this was a time during the Industrial Revolution, just, you know, before the Civil War, where women were entering, like becoming wage earners. There'd been working women since time immemorial, but actually getting paid for it outside the house, there was a lot of people viewed that as improper, and that those women would be maybe sullied by their exposure to the working world. They should be protected at home. And so Alan Pinkerton really went to great lengths to describe his female detectives as very proper women, very respectful, very discreet. Most of them were widows, according to him, which is interesting because that kind of puts you in a protected class because you're not a virgin who could be, you know, besmirched. And you don't have a husband who's, you know, allowing his wife to be working outside the house. You're kind of in this protected state. And so I thought it was interesting that so many of his detective women happened to be widows. You know, it's not an uncommon thing, but I was wondering if he was making that right up.
It's funny. I'm thinking that as you're speaking, really big. It's like, oh, widows, huh? Very convenient. Extremely convenient, right? Right. Well, so the heart of your story really is this tense interaction between Kate, the detective, and Rose, who's a spy for the Confederacy. Two strong, opinionated, interesting and diametrically opposed female main characters. So what was it like writing them?
Oh, it was so much fun. I mean, with my first novel in this novel, I mean, my feminism comes through. I love having strong female leads who are making decisions and you know, have a lot of agency in their life. Even in situations where it doesn't seem like you would have a lot, they're still making decisions. So writing Kate was a joy. It really, so much of it was me looking at, you know, the current political situation and trying to see myself in people across the divide and having a hard time. And so, you know, I think many writers do this. In writing, it helps you kind of process those feelings and thoughts. And then writing Rose, the Confederate spy, was a challenge because I abhor so many of her beliefs. The good news was that I didn't have to invent a lot of the despicable things. They were in her memoir. So not all of her dialogue, some of her dialogue I invented, but the egregious things, the racist, sexist, anti-Semitic. I mean, this woman, like, she had no boundaries. She hated everybody. But I didn't have to make that up, which was nice. I could just let her own words speak for herself. Because, you know, you go into the point of view when you're writing a character. And it's interesting, back to my theater background, I originally explored this story with my theater company 10 years ago in a devised original play, which I wrote, but it was, and I was playing Rose Greenhow, the Confederate spy. And, you know, when I'm not writing, I'm an acting teacher. I teach at a theater conservatory here in New York City. And, you know, so much of being an actor is getting into the mindset of the person. And I have to tell you, it's a really, for me, it's an incredibly unpleasant experience trying to get into the mindset. When you're acting, they always say, don't judge your character, but I could not help judge Rose Greenhow. And so again, that's why it was so helpful that I had her memoir, because I could kind of allow her, I was just kind of the conduit. I did not have to invent her at all.
That's great, the conduit. And I expect that informed your writing as well, because you felt as a person, as an actor, you'd set her lines, you'd sort of been in her place. I guess the one thing that we haven't mentioned about Rose is that she may have been a really important character, but she loved her children.
Yes. Yeah. And that was something, again, you know, there's a little bit of me as the author in there trying to find the common ground across a political divide. And, you know, my rational brain says the people that don't agree with me, there are still smart, compassionate people on that other side. And my heart has a hard time with that because I'm like, well, then they would agree with me. They would be on my side, you know. But so it's such a challenge. So I tried to, again, with the character, set up something that these two women who are diametrically opposed could agree on. And that was the love of children and family connections. And so I would say you know, they are alike in that they've chosen an unconventional career, a career like a man's job at that time. But the other thing that they both share is a love for their families.
That's right. That's good. Thank you. That was a really good explanation. Now, so your two published novels, you've got Sin Eater and The Widow Spy. They're quite different from one another. I guess I'm curious to know what you consider some of the big influences on your writing.
So I think that the thing that joins them both is a love of history and going in and love. I love creating those worlds. And I especially because of my background in theater, I love the physical elements, all of the sensory details in the space. And so both of these stories I think of as very active. And so that's to me what joins them. And then I would say my influences are, again, being a huge history nerd, and then looking for stories where women, where women play a prominent role and are making strong decisions.
That's good. That's good. Now, I understand that you're writing something new. Could you possibly share just a little bit about it?
Absolutely. So what I'm working on right now is actually a story about Isaac Newton and his early years. So for the first, he spent the first half of his life mostly in and around Cambridge. And he shared a room. He had a roommate for 20 years who he shared a bedroom with. And so it's about his relationship with this person who is named John Wickens, and what it's like to be in a time and have someone that you are very close to when that relationship is essentially forbidden.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Thank you so much, Megan. Now, before we go off the air, can you tell our listeners where they can find you online and stuff like that?
Yeah. So I have a website, megancampisi.com, and I'm also on Instagram at Megan Campisi Author and Facebook, Megan Campisi. So yeah, all the usual socials and website, you can find me.
The usual suspects. One of these days, I'm going to stop asking authors that question because we always have, you know, a bunch of the same things going on. But in your case, it's very simple, very straightforward.
Yes.
You don't have a cutesy name that people, I don't mean not like your real name, but like some kind of
Like avatar. No, you have to make an attempt at spelling Campisi. But other than that, just put a whole bunch of I's in there and you'll get there.
That sounds like really a fine idea. I can't recommend The Widow Spy enough. You've mentioned feminism a couple of times when we've been talking, the strong women characters and the history. It just flows. It's really lovely. And I really thank you for taking the time to chat, Megan. Best wishes for great success with The Widow Spy. And I hope when the Isaac Newton book is finished, you'll come back and tell us all about that.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Megan.